Hello, everybody, and welcome to Showhoppers Ripley Season 1, Episode 3, The Merso. I'm Kurt, joined by my former high school teacher, Mr. Sal.
I'm sorry. My computer keeps stinging at me, and I don't know why. Okay. All right, I'm back. I'm ready. I'm good. All I've offered you is my friendship and respect and asked for nothing in return.
That's a good start. That's a good start to sell. Now,
and you on all this computer. That's all I do. I offer it my friendship and respect, and then it dings at me, and I don't know why.
Is that really the only reason why? There's usually more to it, Mr. Sal, with computers. Yeah, as an IT guy.
No, it's mostly just ads somehow. Like, optimize your PC with this antivirus software.
Yeah, you need that. You should be getting that. But you know what the listeners need? They need to know what we rated this episode.
Ratings.
I'm trying to remember what you rated. The last two episodes, you both gave nines, right?
Nines to both. Yeah.
And two was better than one for you.
Yes. Okay. And one was better than two for you. I think you gave both nines as well, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, he does a kill here. I think
it's a kill.
I think you'll like to see that. So that's a plus on your mark. No Freddy in the episode. I think that's another plus for you. You didn't like Freddy last week.
What? Who said I didn't like Freddy last week?
I'm retroactively putting that in there. So just saying, we're co-opting
my statements. I don't know.
Mr. Sal dislikes Freddy.
Never said that.
You didn't say it, but your actions spoke loud enough. So famously dislike Freddy. So plus marks no Freddy, plus marks killing, and thievery. The boat was stolen. So I think with thievery, killing, and no Freddy, you gave it a 10.
Yeah, those are all the reasons why I would give it a 10. Thievery, killing, and no Freddy. Considering that I know the plot of this story.
Oh yeah, you were waiting for these three moments. Freddy free, killing. With a little bit of thievery, 10.
I'm gonna go out on a. I'm gonna risk the reveal here and tell you that nothing in this episode surprised me. How about that? But I do feel like there were some surprises for you, even if you foresaw him killing Dickie in this episode. I don't. I think you knew that he was gonna be killing Dickie eventually. But even if you did, I think there's still surprises in this episode. For instance, when he falls out of the boat, after just having said earlier in the episode that he's not a very good swimmer, I think that probably surprised you quite a bit. I think this was another episode of Show Me, Don't Tell Me that you really enjoy. I think you gave us a 10. I think you loved this episode.
I loved this episode. This was a great episode.
This is amazing. This was so good.
I've never seen an episode. It's so methodical. About killing someone off. I mean, it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So yes. First of all, gave it a 10. Love it.
This is
amazing episode. Amazing.
Yeah.
I forgot how much I love watching a monster work. Right. Think Dexter.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of another character that's quite as monstrous as Tom is. And what I mean by that is that, like, yes, we've seen other series where characters kill, and sometimes they do it cold-heartedly. Sometimes it affects them and they have a level of PTSD or regret to it, or they're trying to cope with the idea of killing. But even when they kill, they do it out of necessity.
Yep.
But there's not as much callous as there is here, right? Where Dexter kills, we cover Dexter New Blood, check out our back catalog, and I guess I won't spoil anything in Dexter New Blood, but in the original series, which I think is a relatively free game. I mean,
I think so.
There's scenes where he famously discussed someone with his kill rooms, and even his own father and a bunch of other characters, when they see how Dexter kills and he cuts these bodies apart. But to Dexter, this just makes sense, right? You just do this. Yeah. It's the optimal way to kill. Here, so much of that Tom does, right? He kills him. Dickie's begging for help. Tom doesn't care. He takes the ring off with like using his own blood and all sorts of just the rope, like getting doing that rope. There's so much.
He smokes a cigarette like he just finished having sex. You know? It's like
he's just relaxing. He's not scared of the water anymore. He's just a monster at work. So I love watching a monster at work, I suppose. That's what I think I've forgotten that I love so much.
Yeah. And look, this episode, this is like one of the best episodes I think we've covered of pretty much anything.
It's like, it's really good. And I did not expect him to kill him this episode. Going into the episode, I didn't expect it. Now, you know, when they went, you know, when the letter comes and now they're going to train alone, I'm going, okay.
Yeah.
Is he going to do it here? Like, this seems like a pretty good time to do it, but is this just bait? This could just be bait. And you know, watch it throughout. So, you know, I'm thinking they might be happening and they're in a boat and obviously so on and so forth. So it's not like that shocking you killed him. But the manner in which and just how it shows all the steps as to like what he does afterward and leaving and when he arrives. Yeah. And it's so complete. It's so good.
Oh, yeah. So this is a pretty iconic scene from fiction, is the Dickie death scene. I mean, reading it in the book, it plays out so similarly in the series to the book. There are some slight differences. You know, in the book, it's Tom's idea to take the boat out, so it's pretty clear. I mean, there's the scene on the train where he's just staring at Dickie sleeping. Like, you get to hear his inner monologue through the narration, and it's like, you know, Tom knew right then that he wanted to kill Dickie. like that's kind of the moment where he's like, yeah, I'm gonna kill this guy.
Yeah, so I want that ring.
So yeah, it's like Smeagol.
It's all about that.
But no, he knows in that moment that he wants to kill him, and he's kind of takes steps toward doing it. The boat's his idea, you know. He kind of gets Dickie. He, in the book, he's like, you want to go for a swim? I'll go in if you do. And he gets Dickie starting to take his clothes off. And so he kind of, because he's in the process of doing that, he's able to hit him with the oar. So it's interesting. And then everything that happens afterwards, him getting knocked out of the boat and climbing back into the boat and the and scuttling the boat later, like that's all in the book too.
Okay, I was curious if that was.
Yeah,
I don't know
it is. Yeah, it is. Now, I did go back and watch. I didn't watch the whole movie. I don't really have any interest in watching the whole movie, the 1999 Matt Damon, Jude Law one. But I did go back and watch this scene. It is so different. And this was like the biggest reason why I didn't like the movie very much, and I prefer the book. In the movie, like, Tom is quite sympathetic. Like, Dickie is berating him on the boat and kind of goads him into it. Like, it's like almost like he's backed into a corner and kind of has to.
The big complaint I have of people that enjoy Dexter is the fact that not enough people see Dexter as a monster, I feel like. That's always the complaint I have. I like Dexter. I like Dexter New Blood. But I always feel like people that watch it don't realize how much of a monster he is, and that's the point. That's part of it. So once
it is,
if Tom's not a monster here, it's not as interesting. Okay.
Yeah. No. Tom is a monster.
If Dickie was a worse person, and you could in any way justify it, if he was abusive to like Marge, if he was super mean to Tom, if there's any sort of real justification here, it makes it so much more worse. But the fact that there's no justification, really, there isn't. I can't think of one that, like, Tom can, what leg he has to stand on over Dickie.
Nope.
There's nothing. What? So he's rich? That's not a right to kill him. Like, he's, if anything, he's ingratiated you. Like, he's been a great friend to you. So,
No, this was such a perfect episode. First, the other thing that I just adored about this episode, other than the cinematography, which is amazing, like the shots are phenomenal. I don't know how they got some of these shots. Like when they do the shots from way down below the water up at the boat, like that's just beautiful. It's amazing. And they do the shot of Dickie sinking. It's incredible. Tom
that was being a real underwater, actor, by the way.
Okay. Tom being underwater and like that's the stuff I don't get. Like the boat coming at him and like it didn't look CGI'd, but it probably is in some way, right? It's
probably easier to CGI with black and white.
Yeah, that could be. And the fact that it's black and white adds a lot. But one of the other things that I really loved is the audio in this. There's the creaky boat sounds. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like the boat moaning and creaking.
Yeah.
Like it was so proud. And that's actually how the episode ends, the very last shot. It could have easily been just zooming in on the ring on Tom's finger, right? That could have easily been the last shot. But they do make the effort of doing one more shot of that boat from way up so you would never hear it, and it makes this really low, deep, loud creaking sound. It's so good. Oh my goodness, this like nothing is said in this episode for about 20 minutes straight.
Yeah, the ending portion is hard to find a quote that's especially in English too. No,
yeah, I know. Yeah, I like your options are so limited on who said it later. I love that about it, but it was gorgeous and sad and just really incredibly shot, really incredibly acted. Like Tom, I think Andrew Scott plays Tom Ripley perfectly. Like this is who Tom Ripley is. Tom Ripley is not the Matt Damon version. Not that I blame Matt Damon, because he was using a script and direction that was being given to him, and just that version of Ripley is a much more sympathetic character who's kind of a victim of circumstance, and that is not who Tom Ripley I think should be. Tom Ripley should be this.
Yes, it's so good. And they also throughout the entire episode. Similar to Culprits did this recently for us, but other series do too, like Better Call Saul in our back catalog last season for that, which is like the tension of it. So that they make a very tense moment, and throughout the episode, it's all very tense, especially after the killing or in right before the killing, but they keep pulling you in and out of tension, right? He walks by the cops. There's a knock on the door. Oh, it's just a cleaner. When he's at the train at the end, right? Just a cleaner washing the window spooks him away.
Right.
When the conductor comes to talk to him, I'm getting worried.
Yeah.
Why? Just because it's just a tense moment.
Yeah.
When he's leaving with these things and walking by the boat owner talking to the cops, like that's a tense moment. So much just upping the intensity, lowering the intensity. The clerk. Oh, yeah. The hotel clerk. Just so much raising the tension, lowering the tension, baiting you with some tension that's not even that important. Some actual risky parts. It's just really good.
Yeah. But so don't you catch yourself? Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm a sicko. But like, do you catch yourself like holding your breath for Tom? Like, oh, no, he's gonna get caught.
I do. Like, I am on Tom's side.
Isn't that weird? Like that's the thing I love most about Patricia Highsmith's novels and about this character specifically, is that you know he's awful. Like there's nothing redeeming about Tom Ripley. And yet you don't want him to get caught. Why? What does that say about me as a viewer, as a reader? Like, what does that say about me that I don't want this guy to get caught? Like, it's so weird. It's such a cool phenomenon. And I haven't experienced as much any of that any more than I have with the Ripley series. And with most of Patricia Highsmith's books. Like, she's incredibly good at writing these people who are really, they don't really have much in the way of redemptive qualities, and getting you to still want them to win. And I don't know how she does it. It's really great.
I love it. I mean, that's I keep referencing Dexter because he's the most monstrous person that we've covered. That's the main character.
Yeah.
So I wonder what about like human. The thing is, Dexter has more redeeming qualities than
absolutely
than this person. Because Dexter, a lot of people justify with, oh, he's killing bad guys. You know, he's getting criminals.
But he justifies that to himself.
He does. And like, okay. But, I would argue that he just does it because he wants to kill. And
exactly.
He's going to kill, might as well kill criminals. But he's not doing it to kill the criminals. He's doing it because he wants to kill.
Exactly. The motivation's not pure.
It's not pure. But there's justification. Like there's a way you can make it. There's a way you can argue with the other side, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can't really hear. Like I don't know no. what you justified as. No. So why I don't know why I support him. You're right. He's all I know in this world. That's why he's all I know. He's who I am.
You know why? Because he's interesting, he's compelling, and you don't want the story to end. I think that's like partly what it is.
Yeah, he's my existence. Like if he goes, yeah. I go.
That's true. Yeah, the book's over. The story, the series is over. If he's gone, then that's it. Speaking of which, there's still 5 episodes left, and Dickie is dead.
Yeah, I'm really like excited that, now.
That's pretty cool, right?
It is. So last episode, the reason I didn't like it as much as the previous episode is I thought Dickie was going to die like relatively soon, and then we'd, you know, go on with him becoming Dickie.
Yep.
Didn't happen. I was like, okay, maybe this is a lot more of getting to know Dickie. Maybe that's like near the very end of the season he takes over for Dickie. Mm-hmm. Different ride, but I'm for it. I'm still liking these characters. And then now we're going down the roller coaster now.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see what's gonna I mean, I have so many questions as to how he's gonna pull it off.
Yeah.
But I guess I'll have to wait and see. Like how's he even gonna enter into the villa first thing? Like he's gonna walk in without Dickie. He can't do that, obviously. Whatever. So many things.
I know. I want to just like read a little excerpt from the train scene where he's staring at the sleeping Dickie. Okay. Mm-hmm. A crazy emotion of hate, of affection, of impatience and frustration was swelling in him, hampering his breathing. He wanted to kill Dickie. It was not the first time he had thought of it. Before, once or twice or 3 times, it had been an impulse caused by anger or disappointment, an impulse that vanished immediately and left him with a feeling of shame. Now he thought about it for an entire minute, 2 minutes, because he was leaving Dickie anyway. And what was there to be ashamed of anymore? He had failed with Dickie in every way. He hated Dickie because however he looked at what had happened, his failing had not been his own fault, not due to anything he had done, but due to Dickie's inhuman stubbornness and his blatant rudeness. He had offered Dickie friendship, companionship, and respect, everything he had to offer, and Dickie had replied with ingratitude and now hostility. And by the way, this is perceived hostility.
Okay? Yeah, I know. Dickie's not actually being hostile.
No, Dickie is amenable at all times. And in the book, too. I mean, in the book, he can sense Dickie pulling away. He can sense him getting more distant. They have the conversation about him going to Cortina? Is that the place? Wherever they were going to go with Freddy.
Freddy's.
Yeah. With just him and Marge. They have that conversation in the book, too. It's not on the boat that they have that conversation, but they have the conversation. And so, like, Tom senses this is done. He gets the letter from Dickie's father, and, like, he sees the word failure. They zoom in on it in the series, right? It's just, like, they show you that word failure. That's not something Tom likes to hear or see. And Dickie becomes, like, a symbol of his failure. So he's a symbol of his failure. He's someone who he feels jilted by. Maybe he's in love with Dickie and it's unrequited love because Dickie's not interested in that way. And all these things come to the, of course, logical conclusion. I gotta kill him.
Yeah, I mean, what else can he do? What more can I do?
not just walk away, not move away, not, you know, take the money and run, not rob him. Just no, I gotta kill him.
I gotta become Dickie Greenleaf.
It's and we're here for the ride. It's so interesting, and maybe this is not. I don't know how popular this series is on Netflix right now. But maybe if it's not popular, and I don't think it's overly popular, but if it's not popular, I suspect that's probably why. But there's not someone that you can root for. There's not someone you feel like you should be rooting for, and yet you're rooting for this guy. And I think it makes people feel uncomfortable about themselves, and they stop watching.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, listen, you're spot on. If you do not feel comfortable with watching just a bad person, straight up, there's no redeeming qualities, then
yeah,
it's just, yeah, there's not much here.
I haven't seen the Netflix series You, but you have.
I have. Like, I did not see the second half of the most recent season that came out, but yeah.
Okay, but is that character anything like this? Like, irredeemable?
Yeah, he is worse than like some people justify Dexter. You can't really justify. Oh, what's his name? Kill me now. I don't remember his name. John? Joe something.
Okay.
But yes, Joe is yeah. In the first season, I'll say this. I will go on to whatever other season. Season two or season three, but in season one, he's stalking and is really emotionally invested in a girl. I think mm-hmm. her name's Rebecca or Becky.
Okay,
and you see the consequence of that. But he's a bad person. Like, there's not anything he does where, I mean, there's some good he does for his community. But like, that doesn't outshadow. I don't think people watch the series and at all feel bad for Joe. Maybe early on, before you start seeing more of the stuff he does. But
okay,
no, yeah, I would definitely say it's. I would say it's in this class, but not as bad as this. Not as bad okay. as I think. As
all right, that's what I wondered, because I mean, the first thing we see of Tom really is like him robbing a doctor's mailbox so that he can. People get $27 checks.
I don't remember season one very well, but he does do some pretty drastic crimes, though. So yeah, I don't feel it the same. I haven't finished the whole series of this, but I'll say this: like, one episode in, I don't think Joe was doing as bad stuff as Ripley was doing. And I don't think three episodes in, he's doing as bad stuff as Tom's doing. So comparing it to that, no, I don't think he's as bad as he is. But he is, yeah, he's like a.
I was kind of encouraged to see that this is a very highly rated episode on IMDb because I was worried that people might not really know what they were watching.
You don't see the
inner monologue watching this. Yeah. Yeah, right. So I mean, they kind of feed it to you with the tense music that that there's something amiss, that there's something that isn't really that's gonna be going wrong if it hasn't gone wrong already, but. This episode is, I mean, almost a full point higher than the previous two episodes. So,
a lot of ways, I guess, that these series with monsters as protagonists. So, yeah, like You, like Dexter, is that because Joe does this in You a lot too. He has an inner monologue like Dexter does. So, you hear his thoughts constantly. You
know? Yes.
You probably hear more than you hear every other character talk, full stop in a lot of ways, just for some episodes. Right? Dexter, you hear a lot of his own monologue.
You do,
Ripley, they could get away with that. I mean, there's a lot of instances where it could just be inner monologue, a lot of quietness.
Yeah,
I'm fine with it though, as is, honestly.
I love that
there's a mystique. There's a lot of mystique to it, and it's making me wonder, like, what's he thinking here?
Yeah, and you do get a lot of that from the book with the omniscient narrator. So I'm kind of filling in a lot of those gaps because I've been reading the book.
Yeah, you're my narrator.
Yeah. But you don't get it while you're watching it. And I wonder if that's frustrating for people or not. I was just enthralled by this episode. This episode is it's practically perfect in every way. This is like a Mary Poppins episode.
I agree. I didn't want to go in over I don't want to overcook the egg or whatever, but I feel like this is one of the best episodes we've covered. Yeah, full stop.
Yeah.
This is just really really good. So, all right.
It is.
Well, enough about that then, Mr. Sal. Let's see if we can guess each other's favorite scene.
Favorite scenes.
You might have noticed I said that with a singular term, our favorite scene. Because I think it comes down to what you constitute as the one scene.
Yeah, I mean, what do you want to call the boat scene? Do you want to call it from?
Oh, is that where you're guessing?
Hold on. Do you want to call it from the time they get onto the boat?
I have it for they're on the boat and including when Tom gets knocked off.
Okay, and then a new scene when he gets back on.
I have it as from when they get onto the boat to when Tom arrives to like that bay to where he starts like ditching
the boat. Where he scuttles the boat, which by the way, I learned that term from the book. I didn't know scuttles. That was a term, but that is the term for intentionally sinking a boat, scuttle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
Okay. I'm not including the boat scuttling into that scene, but the once he arrives there, that's the end of the
Okay. I counted that as I wasn't sure how to count this, so I kind of said, all right, Tom, or taking the boat out to until getting back to town, I considered it maybe one scene or maybe three scenes. But if you want to do two scenes, we can do it that way. Because I kind of broke it up. I said scene 10A, 10B, and 10C. Because it's all kind of the same scene, but if we want to break it up, we could. I think you could break it up to pre-Dickie's death, post-Dickie's death, but still out in the water, and then in the little bay there. But if you want to just do everything from the time they take the boat out to the time he gets to the harbor, the bay there, then we can do that.
I think that's fair.
Okay.
All right. I guess for you, when Dickie leaves to go buy the perfume, and then they meet back up.
You're wrong. Okay. Wait. I'm glad you guessed
it. All right. What did you guess for me?
I guess the boat scene.
Which boat scene? There are two scenes that include the boat.
Not the scuttling of the boat in the harbor, but rather with Dickie, and then when Dickie's gone.
Ding ding ding! You got me right, Mr. Sal. What was your favorite scene?
Well, that was my favorite scene too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I for a brief moment I thought about the train scene as it was happening, because I was like, oh, this is cool. This is just like what it was in the book. And this is the turn. This is where he's certain he's going to do it. Like, this is cool. But no, the boat scene is so good.
So there's just, a lot that happens here. We kind of already talked about it, but like Dickie breaks the news that, hey, me and Marge are going to hang out with Freddy this Christmas. I don't really care, but Marge wants it. You know, they play the blame game, I guess. Tom presses him about it. You know, what is he going to do for the holidays? More on that. Maybe you should go explore Italy. So now it's turned into, maybe you should take a hike, Tom.
And
Tom gets him to talk about his father's letter.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, his father feels like Tom was lying to him based on the information he was telling him and what Dickie was telling him. So, you know, Tom just accepts it. He gets it. And in fact, takes it better than Dickie thought he would. So.
For now. by the way, that letter, did you catch? Because in the book, that there's nothing ever revealed about what's in that letter. He does get the letter. And all that's said is that he started to read it to Tom and then he stopped, because they would read each other the letters that they got from his father and just laugh about it.
Oh.
But with that letter, he started to read it and then he stopped. But we don't get to hear what was actually in the letter. In this episode, though,
you can hear it.
From Marge's window. I don't know if I would have if I didn't have the subtitles on. But I did have the subtitles on, the closed captioning, and it was pretty damning. It was like, I fear he may not have your best interests in mind. He may be misrepresenting himself.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
did you catch all that?
I did, yes. Okay. Yes,
so, and so Dickie doesn't say any of that stuff here.
No.
He does say, you know, I think he feels maybe you cheated him out of some money.
Fair. And Tom feels that's fair, too.
I guess so.
At least he says so. And then
it
happens where he beats him with an oar. And just that alone, when he hits him with the oar and Dickie's asks for help.
Yep.
And he dispatches of him. And he doesn't even fear the water anymore throughout this. And he goes through the rounds, you know, grabs the ring, grabs all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually gets the anchor off by burning it, which was pretty cool. And then
that's a cool scene.
You know, ties the anchor, has to leave because there's a sailboat in the vicinity. And when he tries to dunk him, we get kind of an action sequence where, you know, he gets knocked off, gets hit by the anchor, gets hit by the boat, and he climbs back in, barely avoiding the propeller, and manages to stop the trolling motor and be able to successfully dump Dickie. It was so good. It was amazing.
It's so amazing, right?
It is. It's so good.
Oh,
It's like, wow.
Oh,
we're doing this now. Like, it's go. Yeah. Like, this is happening.
Yeah. Were you shocked when he fell out of the boat?
Yeah. I was too. I mean, like, so I was writing down about, he was so confident. So first of all, he's scared of the water, but you don't look scared of the water. You look so confident. Yeah. Like, and when he starts a fire on the boat, like, you got to have a level of fear doing that, putting gas in and starting the fire, but he does it so confidently. Like, he knows the outcome. Yeah. I'm like, this guy's got everything figured out. Like, he knows what's going to happen. he's confident.
Yeah.
But then when that happened, I'm like, okay, he does not have everything figured out. He's just confident. He does not have it all figured out.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it is a kind of an important distinction to make from the book. In the book, it was Tom's idea to take the boat out. Here, it's Dickie's idea to take the boat out. I mean, this is not premeditated. I think he knew he was going to kill him. I don't think he knew how and how he was going to take care of the evidence afterwards.
No, yeah.
He's kind of making it up as it goes along. But
those can be the best plans.
Apparently.
That's a good scene. It's a very good scene. Oof.
Oh, it's so good. It really, and beautifully shot, just amazing with all like the boat creaking and seeing Tom underwater and seeing Dickie go down. Like, I really just the stuff that you can't do in color probably, it just wouldn't work as well. But just masterful directing here, just cinematography, unbelievable.
Well then, Mr. Sal, we've talked about our favorite scene. Do you want to play the hit game show?
I would love to play the hit game show.
Who said it?
This will be a weaker segment of Who Said It. I have one quote.
Really?
No, I have three. I have three quotes.
Okay. Wow, I'm impressed you got three, honestly. I was watching this, I was like, man, there is not much here.
I don't want to hear any complaints about the quotes.
I know.
Okay. Well, then with that being said, then what do you think I should do? That's the first quote.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought you were asking me, what do you think I should do?
What do you think I should do?
What do you think I should do? So my man, I can't believe I don't know this, but my initial reaction is this is Dickie asking Tom about whether he should get the fridge that can fit two ice cube trays or four. But maybe it's not that. Maybe I don't think it's Marge. Maybe Tom says it to and now. I think this is Dickie to Tom in the cafe talking about ice cube trays.
I'll give you a third of a point there. Wrong scene. Says it to the wrong person, but it is Dickie.
Oh, to Marge. Oh, mm-hmm. in their house.
Yeah,
oh,
when you can hear him.
In the closed captioning.
Yeah. Well, you can hear it. You can hear it. You can hear it.
I know you could. Yeah.
All right. Listen, I gotta be a little trickier. Okay.
No, that was okay. That was fine. I should have known that. Okay. I definitely should have known that.
Well, and we kind of already talked about that, but when this was a cool sequence, Tom goes to Dickie's studio while he's painting and tries to nab the letter out of his coat pocket, but he's a little too late. I mean, Dickie goes to see Marge. Tom follows, sees him read the letter, and then listens in on his conversation with Marge, hearing bits of the letter. You already talked about that, but also kind of acting his role as Dickie as to things Dickie could say in a more threatening way, I guess.
Yeah. He's practicing. First of all, he's practicing.
That's important.
Second of all, he's probably rationalizing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's true.
So he's practicing, you know, becoming Dickie's. He's also probably rationalizing why it's fine for him to kill Dickie because Dickie is going to throw him off the top of the building anyway. And thirdly, I do this to myself all the time. I kind of, you call it railroading, right? I railroad myself into thinking that I know how somebody else is feeling. And I really don't. So Tom's railroading himself here too.
I don't know how to use railroading for that.
No?
No,
maybe I don't understand railroading.
Maybe that is railroading. I don't know. It depends what you mean. I don't understand, actually.
Okay. Right. Yeah, that's okay. Maybe it's we'll just go with the two things. He's rationalizing and he's practicing.
Yes. Okay. No, fair enough. Well, Mr. Sal, you're third for three.
I'm one for three so far.
No, maybe
this needs to be like a 9-point game. So.
Maybe we need to, you know, you're right. If maybe it should be 9 points. That is very right. You are one for nine.
There we go. I'm one for three so far. Don't say one for nine yet.
One for nine totality. I'm saying the total score, but you have the opportunity to get 6 more points.
Okay.
And maybe the bonus point.
Okay. Oh, there's a bonus point.
Now that I just thought about it.
Oh,
I don't know. I don't know how you'll earn it, but there is a bonus point.
Okay. All right.
So if I think you should earn it, you'll have it. Second quote. Only if you're sure.
Okay, this is to Marge, I think, in the dinner scene where she suggests that they go to San Remo without her. She's on her kind of a streak. I think it's Dickie that says it to Marge.
Ding, 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 ding. That's full credit. That's 3 points. There are 4 points total. And yes, spot on. They go out for dinner. It looks as though that Dickie and Marge have already planned out their dialogue.
Yeah, it sure does.
I mean, Marge looks happy as a bee. I don't know why bees are happy in my
scenario. I'm not sure. Busy is how I imagine bees.
I imagine those happy little critters are going around.
The idiom that I've heard is busy as a bee.
Happy as a lark.
Happy as a clam.
I don't know why clams are happy, though, but all right.
Didn't have to do anything. They just sit there in the mud. Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, Marge wants to keep writing. She's happy as a clam. She wants to keep writing. She's on the streak. Dickie shares that maybe they should all go on a trip to San Remo.
Yep.
He's going to sit this one out, but they should go. She really, really, she's sure about that. And so yeah. Tom agrees to go, and Marge is beaming with joy.
Yeah. And, you know, so there's something like, pretty maniacal about this as well. So not from Tom's perspective, from their perspective, because they've really planned this out. This is like, we're cutting Tom loose. This is how we're going to do it. But what Tom really wants is just to spend time with you. And if we pitch it as, I've been spending too much time with you and not enough time with Marge, maybe he'll understand that. So you know, let's do it this way. So
are they an item now?
So I think it's been pretty clear in the series that they're an item.
Yes. Okay.
It's not quite as clear in the books. I mean, in the books, they're more like friends with benefits, you know, in the series, although it is stated that Marge loves Dickie and Dickie doesn't necessarily love Marge. In the series, I think it's been more overt that they are a couple. I mean, the first shot we see of them is them cuddling on the beach.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still stated that Marge loves Dickie more than Dickie loves Marge.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's safe to assume, and for the purposes of the series, that they are a couple.
All right, okay. Because, I mean, Tom's going to have to carry that torch or at least break up with Marge, which I know he's been practicing, so... He's gonna have to pull that off.
Do you understand anything, Marge?
I don't know what I'm gonna call. I guess I'm still gonna call him Tom. Maybe I'll call him Dickie now. I don't know.
I mean, I think you can safely call him Tom.
I'll call him Dickie if that's what he likes. I don't want to blow his cover.
I don't want to spoil anything. So I won't say any more than that. But
all right, no, fair. Okay, well, number three quote. So you're 4 for 9. Third quote. Here we go. It's really impressive.
It's really impressive. Huh. So I feel like you're just going to complete the Dickie trifecta here. But I don't think this is anything in... Oh, no. I know what this is. This is they're talking about the pyramid. The acrobatics pyramid on the beach. That's the thing that's really impressive. I believe it's Tom that says it to Dickie.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, that's it.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
You got 3 points for that one. And yes, so when they're in San Remo, Dickie goes to buy Marge's perfume. Tom hangs out by the water and watches these guys mm-hmm. doing gymnastic feats. Once Dickie returns to him, he comments on, well, I guess not directly Tom's sexuality, but the fact that these men seem to be gay.
Yeah. But
Tom doesn't care. This is impressive what they're doing. It's a good right. show.
And yeah.
I don't know how long they watch it for, but then they decide to go on a boat ride. They rent it and off they go.
Yeah. This scene is right out of the book too. There are the acrobatics making the pyramid on the beach. The one difference is that Dickie is significantly more dismissive of it in the book to the point where he's like, you know what, I'm going back to the hotel. And he actively avoids going out the exit that would have taken him closer to the acrobats. And he goes that one that would have that wow. took him out of his way. So there is that part of it. But this is a really cool scene too, because it does kind of showcase Tom. Maybe Tom's gay. Maybe he's bisexual. Maybe he just is really genuinely not a sexual being, and mm-hmm. and just this is an
impressive feat.
It's just an impressive feat objectively, and I think it objectively is.
It kind of pretty is. But, I mean, just a bunch of guys on the beach making a pyramid. I don't ever see that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I think that Tom is just that, maybe he's any one of those three things, who knows, but whatever he is, it's not like what is socially acceptable at that moment.
No, so. It definitely isn't. No. So, and Dickie doesn't seem too into it, but it doesn't seem like he does in the novel, I suppose, where he's so disgusted that he goes out the other entrance for his
right.
remaining exactly. time and inconvenience yeah. himself.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think that Dickie is concerned about Tom being in love with him. I mean, he says it on the boat later, you know, mm-hmm. he says, do I have to say it? You know, and Tom says no.
Well, so he doesn't say it on the boat then.
Right, exactly. Right. So it's pretty taboo that you just, I guess, don't talk about it. But anyway. Yeah, there we go. 7 for 9.
I don't like that as much as doing it out of 3, though.
2 1/3 out of 3 is exactly the same thing as 7 out of 9.
I like that more. 2 1/3 out of 3.
All right.
Now we're moving on. Mr. Sal, have you prepared your title?
I have. I'm once again pretty proud of it.
Titles transform.
I think now's my opportunity to use my one in a season title. I think this is a good application. Listeners, I talked to Mr. Sal about the segment. I get one season per series where I get to use this title all in.
What, wait, one season per series or one? I thought it was one episode per season.
Sorry. Yes, that's what I meant. My bad. Yes, yeah. One episode per season per series.
Okay. So you're going with all in on this one?
No, I'm not actually.
I mean, it wouldn't be out of the realm of...
it'd be pretty good for this title. Yeah, I know, listen,
it wouldn't be.
I think it'd be pretty good. I think it'd be pretty good.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because he's really going all in. He's shoving all the chips all in. But no, yeah. I did not actually do that. I did write it down, okay. But I did think of a different one that okay. I don't think you'll like, but I like it. Listeners, I will preface this by saying that me and Mr. Sal are American. Do you concur, mm-hmm. Mr. Sal?
I do.
Let Freedom Ring. That's my
freedom
title.
Ring.
That's my title.
I don't dislike it.
There's a few angles you can look at it. Number one, the freedom angle, right? Tom, so when they're shopping for the fridge, Tom stresses the importance of freedom and how a fridge is anti-freedom.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought he was going to say it's un-American for a moment, the way he was talking about that fridge and how unfreedom it was. The Tom values his freedom. And in a way, you know, like getting rid of a... And Dickie talks to him about Tom's potential freedom. Like, hey, go to see other places out in Italy. And mm-hmm. Tom kills him for his freedom. To take Dickie's freedom and make it his freedom. So, you know, there's the freedom part there. And then the ring part is, well, there's the ring. There you go. The physical ring that's literally in the episode, shown so many times throughout. It's become a theme in its own right. So Lut Freedom Ring.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a symbol. Yeah. Okay. All right. I like it a little bit more now that I'm thinking about the ring. I
wasn't about the ring. No, before. See, you didn't think about that. No, you didn't think about that. Yeah.
All right. That's pretty good. That's pretty good, Kurt. That might be my favorite one you've come up with so far.
That might be the best one. So, are you like that one? You like yours more though than this one?
I do like mine more still.
Yeah, you know, I'm seeing a growing trend how we each like our title more than the other.
Yeah, that's why we need the listeners. We need the listeners to chime in. Showhopperspodcast@gmail.com. Tell us who came up with the better alternate title.
I guess we just make the titles.
I mean, it doesn't really do us much good. But, I mean, it'll be good because by the time we record these before we drop them, like well before we drop them. So there's not like we won't be able to talk about it in the next episode what the listeners thought, but it'll make us feel better if we hear from you, listeners. showhopperspodcast@gmail.com, and tell us that my titles are the better ones.
Freedom Ring.
Okay.
If you're an American listener, you have to choose mine. Go on.
Nah. There is the little bit at the end there too, where the boat rental guy is not sure if they're American or English. So I guess there's something there too. Ooh, but anyway,
another one.
Okay. All right. So my title also kind of plays off that refrigerator scene though.
Okay.
So that's the refrigerator thing, by the way, is an instigating event in the book. So like it is like a big deal to Tom that Dickie gets this refrigerator, because they had talked about like spending months in Paris and Rome and all these other places, doing lots of traveling. They had made plans, and once this refrigerator comes out around, that they're not making plans about that. This is the opposite of that. This is the opposite of plans. This is like planning to stay in. So this is
kind of comical to me, the idea of a refrigerator is like that. But I get for the time.
Right, for the time, absolutely. I mean, to the point where he says, I think I'd rather hang myself than buy a refrigerator, right?
He calls it. That did not age well.
Oh, I know. So, all right, so he likens the refrigerator to the item that I'm going to use as my title, and the title that I'm coming up with is Millstone. So a millstone is, I mean, a literal millstone is just like a wheel that was used to grind wheat into flour and in a mill, right? It's a millstone. But metaphorically, a millstone is like an anchor. It's like an unwanted thing that holds you back. Okay, so Tom calls the refrigerator a millstone because to him that is undesirable. He does not want to be held back. He certainly doesn't want Dickie to be held back, because if Dickie being held back means Dickie close to Marge and not Tom, and that's no good for Tom.
That's so a problem.
Yeah, so he does not want that. This refrigerator is a millstone that holds Dickie back, which thereby holds Tom back. So later in the episode, Tom ties almost a literal millstone around Dickie's ankles to submerge him in the water. Now, that's not a millstone. That is an anchor, but it is a stone. It's not like a stereotypical, you know, U-shaped piece of iron. Right?
It's
a stone anchor. And I think that's intentional that they use that terminology in referencing the refrigerator as a millstone to see. I mean, when you think of a millstone, the thing that's tied around your foot to hold you back, that is what is happening to Dickie in that moment. And probably because Dickie thought of Tom as a bit of a millstone, where he wasn't able to get on with his life because Tom was always around. So Millstone is my title.
That's an all right title. I don't think it's as good as any of the titles I've come with before. I think that's an all right title. I think you're doing a good job. Goodness.
I think I'm on a streak here, man. Really, really great titles. Again, we are good at this. Somebody needs to hire us to create titles.
No, I think we are, actually. No, I agree. I like our titles. I think your title is better than the title that they put.
You know, I will say, though, I really like their title a lot.
It's more fitting. I mean, they also, and we didn't really talk about it for this one. It's submerged, right?
Yep, submerged.
Okay. Submerged, okay. So, all right. nice. I mean, there's a lot of water and whatnot. I think Let Freedom Ring is a... I have a New Hope.
It was a New Hope. Yeah.
My first one.
That was the first
hope.
One, yeah.
And the only
yeah.
reason I bring that up is because of next week's title, which we'll talk about at the end of the episode.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Well, you know, that's a good title, though. You know, joking aside, it put in the Millstone part.
Yeah.
You are right, though, because I was thinking about how that was, like, oddly, it was an odd anchor. But maybe he just found a nice rock to use as an anchor, is what I in my head.
Well, that's the anchor. But yeah, the refrigerator thing, I'm glad I wanted to make sure we talked about that too, because that is a huge instigating event. That is like the symbol of the turn of Dickie and Tom both. So Dickie away from Tom and Tom toward murdering Dickie. So I did have a couple of other possibilities I thought about, but ultimately Millstone was what I thought was the best one. I thought about using Anchors Away, which I think that would have been a little too cute. But and I thought about using just San Remo, which just would have been a little too general.
All right, fair enough. All In would have applied here as well.
All In would have applied. Oh, before I forget, because I did forget when we talked about the boat scene. And I promised you I wouldn't forget.
Oh, yeah.
Before we started recording, you said that you were bored. You called me boring. Yes, that's right. So before we started, you called me boring. And I said, oh, that's interesting because it didn't come up in the series and it doesn't come up in the book. But in the movie, Dickie like gets in Tom's face and calls him boring in the boat. Sorry. So, yeah.
Listeners, I promise. Off podcast, Mr. Sal is very boring, but on podcast, the bee's knees.
Wow, I don't know how to take that.
It's a compliment. You're great.
It's
on the
a compliment for my on podcast persona.
Yeah,
slap in my face of everything.
We'll fight about this after the podcast, listeners. Don't worry.
Yeah. So anyway, that's that Millstone.
All right. Millstone's growing on me more and more.
Yeah, that's a good one. Maybe it's recency bias. I feel like I've said this about each of my titles, but this might be my favorite.
Yeah, I feel
that
the I've same come way up with about every title I make too. I go, man, I think I really outdone myself here. Love Freedom Ring. That's a good one. I should be thinking like this more.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I did actually for a moment have a thought of just calling it The Ring, but then it would be confused with the horror franchise.
Earlier since I did A New Hope, I was like, maybe I could do like Lord of the Rings or some like play on that franchise, but I don't know what
the the Fellowship of the Ring. or The Ring of Power. Oh my goodness. Anyway, no. Millstone. Millstone it is.
Well, I have a few more things to add on the episode. I'm sure you do too. So sad about that. All I really want to add here is the ending part of the episode. I don't think we've talked about as much.
Right.
Which is, first of all, when he gets to the bay and he ditches the boat, when he scuttles the boat.
Yes.
The motor is still visible.
Yes.
I wonder if this boat will come back to bite him at all. I mean,
the last shot is the boat creaking, like as though it is a ghost haunting him. So,
is this Chekhov's boat potentially? I want that to be noted out there for the listeners that are like me that are ignorant to the series and don't know where it's going to go. So, that boat, Chekhov's boat potentially. Keep that up for knowledge. Anything you want to talk about with that bay scene of the boat?
I mean. It was really cool. He doesn't attempt to burn the boat in the book, but I loved that he did it here because that does seem like the more permanent solution, right?
Yeah.
But it's wet. so it's soaked in blood. How is it going to burn? It's not going to burn very well. So I like that a lot. They show everything in this episode. They don't leave anything out. It's so good. Man. Yeah. Well, so
following the boat then, after the boat, he heads in back to the hotel for the night. When he sees cops, he has to act natural. What do you do when you have to act natural in front of police?
I wave to them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know many people that just say hi to two people they don't know when they're in the middle of a conversation.
I mean, I always wave to police officers, though.
Like, really? I do.
I think
I've never waved to police. Maybe that's my problem.
No. I do it all the time. Wave all the time.
You've got to be figure. Me. Are you really?
No, I do. Because
but
I,
what
I
if they're in the middle of a conversation?
It's just a wave. It's not interrupting.
Okay, fair. You know, that's a smart point.
I think so.
Yeah, you wave and they like see you. You're like, all right.
Yeah.
See me.
Yeah. Fair. Because I mean, if I'm doing something wrong, I'm not waving to a police officer, right? I'm not calling attention to myself.
So I'm good to go.
Anyway. All right.
He gets into the hotel, deals mm-hmm. with the clerk. And so this was tense.
It was. And by the way, we can't. Like, first of all, this isn't black and white, so we don't know. The blood isn't necessarily showing up as much as it would be if it was in color. But we also can't smell what the clerk is smelling because he looks at him with suspicion. And I imagine it's because he smells like the ocean. Like, he's...
smells the ocean, salty.
Yeah, the ocean has a very distinct smell. Like, and so, I mean, Tom probably reeks. Between blood, sweat, and the ocean, he probably smells awful, and that might be why the clerk is kind of giving these sidelong looks.
Yeah, he's alone. He doesn't have his pal with him. And I like this where he asks for the key kind of twice. Yep. I don't know. He like makes a action to grab it to try to
so yes.
Clerk can't change the mind.
I totally agree. That's so good.
He like so asks subtle. For it. The clerk's like thinking for it, and he goes, "Oh yeah, I'll take the key then."
Yeah, and he does it later again with the passport.
He does. He's like, he prompts the question, and when the clerk's kind of milling it over, he kind of puts his hand out to grab it. Like he's,
yeah, exactly. You know,
inviting him to hand it over. It was a subtle, but I liked the touch. I wanted to note that. And so, so when he leaves and goes, he does that. Well, he's in the, I already mentioned the fact that the cleaner knocking on the door adds some tension, but we also see the person who owns the boat waiting. But what Tom doesn't see is the fact he goes to talk to the police. And man, my heart for Tom was racing when he was talking to the cops. Oh, yeah. He even like looks over while he's talking to the cops. I thought he was
going to I know. It's so weird how you feel like nervous for this guy. Because, I mean, the nervousness isn't for the boat owner, right?
No. I'm nervous for Tom. Tom. Like, Tom's going to get caught. I'm Tom. That's why, dude. I can't be caught.
We're
in this
weird.
Together. Me and Tom, we're accomplices. I didn't tell him.
You do kind of feel like an accomplice when you watch something like this. It's really amazing.
It makes you see how I feel. Oh, man. Oh, well, okay. There you go. That's everything I really have left to mention for the episode. Is there anything you...
The only other thing I wanted to mention was, did you catch the name of the hotel where they were staying?
I did not.
The Hotel Patrizia. So I assume that's a nod to Patricia Highsmith. So.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. Everything about this episode is beautiful. Even like a murder is beautiful in this episode.
The black and white, it's selling me.
I know. Anyway,
why do we ever get color? Well, there's no need.
Seriously, right? Well, it's funny because I did, after I watched this episode, I did watch that boat scene from the Talented Mr. Ripley, the 1999 movie, and I was like, ew, why is this so brightly colored?
So, my eyes.
It's like, what are they trying to do here? It's like Wizard of Oz or something. But anyway.
All right, well, Mr. Sal, let's check the time.
All right.
Yeah, TV time.
There you go.
Ain't no time like a TV time. I think this one will be rather simple. I think a lot of these TV times are going to be a lot of the same thing here. So I think we're both going to guess this is going to be 5 rating. I think what we should instead guess is what percentage gave it a 5.
Okay. Well, I think I already looked at it.
Okay, so. You already looked, so you know. Okay, I will say 69.
Okay. For reference, let's just look at what the previous episodes were. 56% for episode 2 and 47% for episode 1. Mm-hmm. So this one is 76%.
Whoa.
Yes, people are loving this one. And 0% on 1 or 2 stars.
It's just a good episode. I feel like you could show this to someone that has not seen any of this series.
Oh, and yeah.
It's still like a pretty banging episode.
Absolutely. I mean, you could show this. I mean, and actually probably should show this in like film school. This is so good.
And title it Freedom Ring.
Millstone. Okay.
There's another America touch to it.
Or Samarisone. Samarisone's okay too.
Samarisone,
anyway. Right. I'm assuming that the people said Tom for this one and that you said Tom as well.
Yep. Same for me.
Do you want to guess the percentage? I haven't looked yet.
Let's say 95%.
Okay, I'm going to go under that. I'll say 94, do the prices right nonsense to you. But
no need to. It's probably
only because I think there might be some in memoriam votes for Dickie. Let's see. Tom, 88%.
Oh.
9% for Dickie.
Ugh,
the in memoriam vote.
Well, neither of us got credit for that. We were both over.
That's about in line with where Dickie's been, though. He was where he was in episode 2, I should say. He was 8% in episode 2.
Well, so henceforth, if he impersonates Dickie, and again, you don't have to say anything, but in my head canon, if he heads over, he starts pretending to be Dickie. Well, who are the people at TV Time going to say? Is that Tom Ripley or is that Dickie? It's going to get a little confusing.
I mean, it's Andrew Scott, so I assume they're going to vote for Tom. I mean,
you say that, but it's going to get confusing when he looks just like Dickie.
You think he's going to look just like Dickie? Would he have to do in black and white to look just like Dickie, I guess?
Change up his hair?
Dickie's got some scars on his face, I noticed.
All right, he can get some scars on his face. So he'll figure it out.
Interesting.
Prosthetics, surgery, I don't know what he has got to do, but he'll figure it out. He'll look just like him, maybe. I don't know.
And in both the movie and the book, Dickie is described as kind of blonde, and Tom's hair is darker. So in both the movie and the book, there is that contrast, which, if changed, would make them look kind of similar.
True. Well, we'll see. We'll have to see. I'm very excited, though, for next week's episode. I might watch it tonight. I probably won't.
I'm going to say that I don't think it's going to get better than this episode. This is like probably the peak of the series, but it's still great after. I mean, because again, we've got 5 episodes left of being nervous that this guy who's awful is going to get caught, even though he should get caught.
He should.
And that's just an interesting situation to be in.
Something else I want to know for next week's episode is titled La Dolce Vita. You know that?
La Dolce Vita. It means the sweet life.
Actually, are you familiar with this play or movie? Okay, so
No, I'm not.
All right, so this is a movie that came out in 1960 that takes place in Italy. Reading the synopsis on it. A relentless reporter drifts through life in Rome while someone contends with the overdose taken. Oh, so someone deals with an overdose after their girlfriend. He pursues the person that went to Rome. There's quiet reflection and intriguing cinematography and character study. The comedy drama, satirical comedy drama. From 1960, so it's around this time frame that it came out. So I wonder if this is going to mirror what happens in the episode. I mean, I'll watch it and maybe look at more about this.
Or maybe someone will actually go watch it.
But it's 3 hours. I'm not going to watch this movie.
No, maybe one of the characters will actually watch it.
Oh, I see. Okay. And something else I want to note is that this is the title of a movie as an episode title. When I, in episode 1, titled the episode a movie. So, I think I'm more in line with what the series creators had in mind, Mr. Sal.
That's fine. You can be. That's not what I'm going for.
Anyway, listeners, thank you for listening. If you have your own titles, please, or anything, you know, a comment, maybe you want to email and say, hey, I don't think Mr. Sal's boring off the podcast. Send us an email. Say that. You know, let it know.
That'd be creepy, but okay.
Yeah, it's not that creepy.
That's not you.
You can email say, Kurt, I bet you're boring off the podcast. You could say that. That might hurt my feelings, but okay. That's all right. If you want to subscribe, we'd appreciate that. Reviewing the podcast, check out our back catalog. It's extensive. There's a lot out there. And if there's something there that you wish was, or if you wish there was something that was there, you can email us about that. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with the next episode of Ripley. Take care.
Shoehammer some show hoppers into your day.